There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Drive Live, Talks Automotive.
It's Drive Live Talks Automotive. Our guest today is Dr. Britta Lang, Technical Director, Evaluation and Education for E-Road Safety and Transport Consultants. Welcome along, Dr. Britta. How are
Hi,
you?
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Our topic today, I guess, we're talking about the psychology of the Dubai driver. We're talking about what goes through the mind. I mean, lots of people that are listening to this program are battling.
Yeah.
To make their way home on the roads tonight. And battling is probably not an understatement on roads here, is it?
No, definitely not. I do think that it's a road environment that is often hampered by congestion, people displaying behaviours that are fairly aggressive. And I would describe it as a highly stressful driving environment.
And you work in the field of psychology. Why is psychology something that we should apply to road users? Why is it important to look at the psychology of that emotion of sitting behind the wheel, and whether you're hunched over in a queue of traffic, whether you're getting angry, whether there's, you know, a lot of stress there? Why is the psychology element important?
Well, I think as long as we've got humans participating in traffic, we'll have driving psychology as a really important topic to make that better, that experience of using roads. And I do think psychology has a lot to offer. So traffic psychology basically takes all the principles of general psychology and just tries to apply it into the road or the traffic context. So what we know from things about emotion, motivation, attention, memory, cognition, these are the things that we try to apply to make the driving experience, the road use experience, better.
I suppose the issue is on the roads, things are kind of amped up, aren't they? And it depends on the power of the car you have. The more powerful the car, the more exaggerated the version of yourself you can potentially become. If you've got a great big 5.0, a big, you know, 5-litre, 6-litre car, that for lots of people is an extra bit of power and they want to assert themselves.
And, for sure. And I think you're touching on a really important point, that driving very often is not just about getting from A to B. It's not just a mobility solution. Driving as we know it to date, I think, is also often something about expressing yourself, defining who you are by the vehicle you're driving in. And of course, so we're talking a lot about motivational things, emotional things that we are conveying in the way we drive and with the vehicle that we are driving.
And I guess to some extent that goes for the car you choose to drive. So lots of people have what might be perceived as big, aggressive cars, whether they're powerful, fast or not. And the way we respond to other cars, whether it's a small car, do we think that maybe we can push in front of that car a bit more if we're in a big car? Do we think we can tell someone to get out of our way? Is that something that you find?
Yes, of course. I think that makes a big difference. I think there's different motivations. If you think about car purchase, you might be economically driven. What car can I afford? So if you have economic considerations, you're probably going for something smaller. You might have safety considerations that you take into account. You're a young family, you've got kids that you want to be safe. You're going for the safer vehicle, the bigger vehicle. You might be a young guy who's trying to impress everybody, his friends and peers, so you're going for the faster one. So I do think that motivations influence how we decide.
What specifically can you tell us about somebody who has a car with bucket seats with lime green inserts? does that tell you something about the driver?
Well, it would probably be mean to generalise. But I do think that it would definitely show that you take a deep interest in the car that you're driving.
It kind of makes a point. I know I'm taking the mickey out of ADT and NLT here, but it all goes to this kind of, this is an expression of myself, isn't it? And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just how you use or employ that expression of yourself. And when you have a car, that's a powerful machine.
Yes, for sure. And if you just look at how cars are advertised, I'm German, so I can just comment on German cars and vehicles. If you read an advertisement for a BMW, it's probably telling you something about the amazing experience on the road, the feeling of acceleration, that feeling of power, freedom, independence. So these emotions are also used in how we advertise vehicles. So yeah, for sure, they determine our choices.
And how about someone who maybe is trying to recapture their youth in a multi-purpose vehicle that can go off-road and still prove their fun, even though they're a bit older in life? What would would you think about that?
Can I just say that's a classic case of touche?
No, I would say good for them. Sort of, you know, multi-purpose vehicle do take you into different environments. It is true. And if you're looking for the adventure in the desert, it's good to have a vehicle that can cope with those demands. But of course, it's not always about purpose.
And I mean, obviously, I like to laugh at Tim, but I didn't even realize my car could go off-road until Tim pointed that out. But what kind of drivers, forget the cars for a second, what kind of drivers do we have here in Dubai? What is sort of the typical driver you come across?
Well, I think that's an interesting point, because there's, I think, not a lot like the typical driver in Dubai. I was just sort of before the interview looking at stats a little bit to sort of see who's learning to drive in Dubai. And we have about 180,000 people registering for learning to drive every year. So that's just the young drivers who come into the new driving pool. And they come from everywhere. I think one of the issues with Dubai drivers is the diversity of the drivers. So yes, you have some Emiratis, but you've got a lot of people coming from other countries, the biggest proportions from India and Pakistan, also Filipinos, other Arabs, Westerners. So it's a very large group of different people who participate in traffic. And that's just the learner drivers. On top of that, you've got the people who already come with a license. You've got tourists who drive here and are entitled to drive whilst they're here, and so forth. And then, of course, transit drivers from other Emirates as well.
And everybody that's coming into this mix of people on the road, all the road users maybe, have come from different, you might drive on a different side of the road, you might observe different kinds of speed limits, it might be in miles per hour and not kilometres. So all of us together are creating a very different atmosphere on the road.
Yes, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And I think that's one of the challenges that we face here in road safety and changing the driver psychology, because there are so many cultural differences, so many, as you said, differences in the knowledge of the road laws and so forth.
And so you've got really no chance of creating one unified driving culture, have you? How on earth could we do that? If we've got 200 nationalities, 180,000 new drivers coming everywhere, how can you amalgamate that so that we all have one set of manners, we're all disciplined, we don't swerve? I mean, that's really tricky.
It's a challenge, but I wouldn't be pessimistic about it. It's basically what other countries have done for many years. Maybe that they didn't have as much diversity of the drivers, but I think there's opportunities. If you think about influencing behavior and you think of about a lifelong learning approach, there's certain opportunities that we have here in Dubai that start from road safety education at school, where you try to instill a common code of behavior on the road. That's same for driver training when you're a learner driver. The same in the company context at work. The employers can do a lot to sort of instill certain behavior through company policy. And then, of course, you've got things like road safety campaigns, enforcement, and so forth.
All right, we're talking to Britta Lang. Britta is Technical Director for Evaluation and Education at 4E Road Safety and Transport Consultants. We're talking driver psychology, greater safety, for example, and we're going to move on in a few minutes' time. Road safety education for children. How do they pass that on and help to forward that with their parents?
Drive Live, Talks Automotive.
Our guest today is Dr. Britta
Lang.
Oh, you're hello.
Oh, no, I was just trying to cut in there because you looked at me and I thought maybe I'd missed something.
Just me frantically waving at you.
All right, then, Drive Live. It is automotive on Drive Live Talks today. Britta Lang is here. We were talking before the break and just really introducing the topic today, which is psychology on the roads and trying to question why people act the way they act. We'll come back and look at some specific instances, Britta, in a minute. For example, why people tend to push in all the time. There's a question that we'll put to you. But there is one thing that I mentioned just before the break. Road safety education for children is something that the RTA are looking at. In particular, it is something that lots of schools reinforce as part of, not necessarily as part of the curriculum, but as something that is obviously very important. To what extent is it important to do that so that kids go home and almost guilt their parents into driving better? Because to me, that seems to be, or could be, a very effective way of getting the message across.
Oh, absolutely. think that is a really powerful way of helping children to improve the behavior of the parents. So, and children very often take great pride in it. So when I talk to people about the role of children in road safety education, they very often say like, oh, my child participated in a program and it came home, and every time that I now get into the car, it says, daddy, daddy, or mummy, mummy, why, you know, put on your seatbelt before we start driving. So I think they can be great road safety champions for the family.
See, that's an important point, isn't it? It's the little things, it's the little reminders and the little guilt things. My kids, as a matter of course, will do that. It's the first thing they do when they get in the car, because they were told to do it for so long. Mm-hmm. But they are also now, if I forget to indicate or something, they're now driving the car for me and taking the mickey out of me for doing something wrong, inadvertent or not. You know, so it's almost like the roles are reversed.
But you say to him, though, that you are a reformed... You've reformed some of your bad habits on the road, shall we say?
What are you trying to say? I would always indicate, if that's what you're saying. I would always do that. But I do think that I'm from the UK, so I was taught a certain way. And I think I probably, if I'm really honest, I've become a more aggressive driver since I've been here in the UAE.
I think that is something that a lot of people say when they say they come here to the UAE. And what I find always really interesting is that lots of people report that they drive differently here from their home country, and when they return to their home country, they will drive according to the rules and social norms of their home country.
That's true. I was back in the UK last week and I was on the road and I thought, this feels different. I'm doing different things to what I might do normally. And I think you adapt, don't you? So you adapt, because when I first arrived, it was a shock to me. The roads were so different, so big. Everybody's going so fast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's small things that you notice, like I would queue to leave an exit or a slip road, whereas lots of people will drive alongside the queue and expect to cut right in. And why do you think there's a mentality or a psychology sort of difference that people feel it's okay to do that?
Yeah, I think it's the perception of acceptability. Because if you try to do the same thing in the UK, you will get feedback from your fellow drivers indicating to you that it's not okay and it's not a nice thing to do to your fellow people, and everybody should wait in line. So you have a culture where people will respond to you if you don't adhere to the culture's norms. And I think we have exactly the same thing here, where we just don't have that feedback of saying it's not okay, and of course every societal perception is always backed up by rules and how the rules are enforced. And I think that that element of enforcement and societal norm is just missing here at the moment, or isn't strong enough, put it that way.
And what do you think we could do to change that? How can we maybe make the norms different here? What could we do from a psychological point of view to change the way that we all behave on the roads?
Well, I think that you already offered the answer in a way. Sort of, it start with yourself. Obviously, you know what good driving looks like and what safe driving looks like. You know that these rules shouldn't vary whether I'm in Germany or whether I'm in the UAE. So it's starting with myself on implementing what I know good road use behavior is and insisting that I will abide by that wherever I drive. I think that's a very simple point to start with yourself.
So you look at yourself, but then why do we have people? What's the psychology of somebody who decides, I'm just going to swerve in and out, I have no regard for anybody else, I'm just going to cut you up at junctions, I'm going to make you wait? What is the psychology of a person that thinks that way? Because it can't just be, can it, that they're late for a meeting and they're trying to get there as quick as they can?
No, I think there's a lot of things that can be at play. And in psychology, we usually talk about planned behavior, what you plan to do and then implement, so impulse or emotional behavior, which you haven't really planned and just do. And then there's habit, where you literally don't think about it and you just do it because you've always done. And that's three slightly different kinds of behavior. Now, if we talk about the cutting in and sort of changing lanes at last moment, I think, so from my observation, I sometimes think that the drivers want to demonstrate that they have the skill to do it. So it's kind of a demonstration of skill. That's one thing. Taking pride in driving dangerous maneuvers and surviving them. There's sort of the other motivations, as in, okay, late for a meeting or having to get somewhere fast. I do think that there is a disregard for other people's safety on the road. It's a very egocentric way of driving. I think sort of that makes for behavior in traffic that isn't as safe as it should be.
So to be a really good driver, you've got to leave your ego at home, haven't you? In theory?
I think, you know, you need to think that in the driving context where we share the road space with other human beings, we can't just be egoistic. I think we need to be members of a community and of a society where you look after each other and you don't engage in behaviours that will put your fellow people at risk.
We've had quite a few texts in about this topic, actually. Khaled's texted in and said, giving feedback can get you in a bit of trouble here, but so if you can't beat them, join them. So he's saying, I feel like taking an aggressive form of being on the road helps me against all the other road users. And Vivek saying he doesn't agree. Zahabe thinks, he said, I tried to give feedback to a fellow driver when he got cross in the queue. His response was to ask if I was from the RTA, and if I wasn't, what's it got to do with them? I mean, there is a sense that people feel like if other people are going to be aggressive, then my only option is to be aggressive too.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we call the dove and the falcon problem. So if everybody behaves nicely and behaves like a dove, wouldn't it be wonderful? But if you are a falcon, the one falcon in a flock of doves, or whatever the right term for that is, you are going to get a lot more benefit because everybody else behaves nicely, but you've got that one falcon. But of course, then as you perceive as the dove that it's much more beneficial to be a falcon, you just become more aggressive and you end up with a flock of falcons where things are just more aggressive for everybody. And is that where we want to go? I don't think so.
That struck me on a number of levels, but I'm stuck on what the collective noun for a whole bunch of doves is. And also falcons. I'm thinking flock of falcons works.
Flock of falcons.
A duvet of doves? I don't know. What
a duvet of doves.
Something.
No, I think doves have probably got something much more lovely to describe the collective noun
An eiderdown of doves or something. But there's another interesting point. Greg texts in and says, come on, guys. Laws, enforcement. I mean, which is fine. And we would all like to see more enforcement, but we've got lots and lots of roads, very fast, limited number of police. So if you're going to misbehave, you're going to misbehave when the police aren't there. So that's a chicken and egg situation. But we do need more enforcement. That's clear. But, you know, aside from finding people, what do we need to see? You know, you can fine people for speeding 400, 600, 800 dirhams, but it's not as effective, unfortunately, as it should be.
Sure, but I do think that the speeding enforcement is making a difference, as has made a difference over several years. Now, there's other things that you can also enforce, such as close following, and I do think there's a pilot project currently running by Dubai Police, sort of looking at how that can be done and what the benefits of that are. I do also think, not so much from an enforcement point of view, but sort of from a societal point of view, I do fully take the point that providing feedback is not always, you know, something that is viable. But I do think what you can do and what we all can do is sort of to say to our other people when things are that are like that are being discussed is basically saying it's not cool. So, or if you observe it and you're in the car, it's the peer comment, I think, it has a powerful impact. And if we just basically say to our fellow people, well, this wasn't cool, that is something that could also be very effective.
We have one suggestion that was texted in saying we could have a highway code that might help people with a general idea of where to go. Just when we come back, we want to have a look at the psychology behind maybe the treatment of traffic offenders or road safety awareness campaigns. Mm-hmm. If you do have a question for Dr. Britta, text in 4001 or via the free messaging app. It's Drive Live with Tim NNLT. It's Drive Live Talks Automotive. Our guest is Dr. Britta Lang, Technical Director, Evaluation and Education at 4E Road Safety and Transport Consultants. Britta, we've been talking a lot about the psychology of road users, what it's like to be stuck on the roads here, but one of the things I was interested in is how you can use psychology in maybe the rehabilitation of people. So if they do speed and they are caught on that, how do campaigns like road safety awareness impact, and the courses that people can go on, not just here in the UAE but around the world, what can we do from a psychological point of view.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that can be done, and I think there are a lot of great examples around the world of how you can use the opportunity of somebody violating and turn that into an opportunity for re-education. And there are some, for example, road safety camera partnerships in the UK that use the fine that you should pay towards funding the courses that are going to sort of teach you or try to re-educate you on driver behavior subsequently. So you've got a self-funded model of behavior improvement. And I do think sort of a violation provides an opportunity for re-education. If you want to talk about it positively, it's an opportunity for re-education. The courses typically try to engage those who have committed an offense by making them think more widely about what they're doing. And I think most people, as they set out, or everybody who sets out on a road journey, doesn't set out with the intention of getting themselves into trouble, having a collision, injuring themselves or injuring other people. And I think that's the beauty of life, that we are always so carefree and don't quite think about the consequences that our behavior might have. So we make light of that a lot of the time, and I think speed awareness courses or other seatbelt awareness courses are a great opportunity to bring home the full consequences of our actions on other people as well.
There's also the school of thought, isn't there, from lots of driving instructors, and we have had this on this programme. We've taken out once a couple of years ago and marked on how we drove the same journey. This was just before you went out to it. Alex and I did it. She won, actually, as well, by half a point. Anyway, that still rankles with me.
But the
thing that I remember from that, and I'll just put this to you, Britta, was the instructor, Robert Hodges, said to me, look, the thing to do when you're driving is, this is not something that you switch off and do. This is something you have to think of as an activity. This is something you need to concentrate on. Yeah. And I think for lots of us, we do the same journey to and from work, and you tend to switch off a bit. And that's what we shouldn't be doing.
That's very true. And I do think that every single lab study that you will do, there's the notion about the primary task and what happens to your performance on the primary task if you introduce a secondary task. You can replicate that with anyone in the world. There is nobody who can carry out the primary task as well as they would do if that was their own focus, their sole focus. As soon as you introduce a secondary task, be that mobile phones, be that looking at a navigation system and whatnot, you see a performance decrement on the primary task, which is driving. And most of the time, or many times, luckily, the traffic environment is forgiving enough to allow us to perform a little bit worse. But the way that accidents happen is that one thing comes to another. Somebody in front of you has also made a mistake. So, and you find yourself very quickly in a situation that spirals out of that safe task performance that you think you were operating under.
We've had quite a few text messages, but this is a topic that people are obviously very passionate about. Salman thinks that we need to install cameras at entry and exits to catch people who cut in. He also wants to see an increase in fines and black points. Khaled thinks that you should aggressively fine people who drive below the speed limit as well, and particularly people who don't know about lane discipline. Zahabe also thinks lane discipline is something that we should look at. We need to get it out of their minds that they don't have to drive in the fast lane. They can move along and overtake, and that will solve half the problems. Just a really interesting text, no name on this one. Says, hi guys, someone just jumped a red light and hit a taxi head on just when we were listening to talk about doves and falcons. So they obviously weren't listening to the program. Had they been listening about doves and falcons, they might have been a little less aggressive.
I hope there are no serious injuries in that as well. It's a really interesting point. Is there a case, and you've talked about re-education, you just touched on re-education, Britta. Yeah. Is there a case to be made, a strong case to be made, for if you have offended in some way, whether it's speeding or I don't know, lane jumping, whatever it is, for some kind of compulsory re-education when you go to, say, re-register your car, or if you earn yourself two speeding fines, then you have to go and attend a course. Should we be pointing towards something like that?
Yeah, so to my knowledge, all the schemes that are currently being operated are voluntary schemes where you can choose the fine and the points, or you can choose the points and the re-education. Yeah. So you're basically investing the money of the fine into education. And I also know that the current schemes differ a little bit to whom they are offered. So in the UK, some of the speed awareness courses are only offered to low-level offenders, be it with the rationale being that presumably those people are most willing to keep to the speed limit and just didn't, you know, at that time didn't really pay attention, so may be most prone to accepting and changing their behavior. Compulsory driving education or remedial training, I do think it has the problem of acceptance, of course. You don't want people to sit in a course and be demotivated and sort of not be willing to work with the facilitator from the start. And just, however, in reading through the course comments on normal speed awareness courses, very often people go in there with a view of saying, a waste of time. Why did I go there? What could I possibly learn? They're just going to try to re-educate me and tell me what to do. And I think the really good approach is not to tell people what to do, but to remind them of the reasons why safe driving is good for everybody.
Okay, well, we've just one final word to Omar, who texted in and said the best solution is universal autonomous cars. Dr. Britt, I think we'll have to get you in to talk about that topic on a whole different note. We've been talking about the psychology and psyche of the Dubai driver. Our guest today was Dr. Britt Alang, Technical Director, Evaluation Education for E-Road Safety and Transport Consultants. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Britta, for having me.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.